Good evening. I wish to greet each one in the name of Jesus again tonight. Good to be with you here. Enjoyed the singing. Appreciate the effort that went into that. So we've come now to the last night here with over time together. Thank you for your attention through this week, and thank you for lifting me up in prayer as I looked into God's Word. I wasn't quite sure earlier what to speak on tonight. When I was home there was an idea that had come to me, something that we face a lot in life. People face a lot of times people go wrong. And I was thinking of the idea of the relationship between dads and their sons. And we got a lot of dads and sons here tonight, and so that represents a lot of possibility for good, a lot of possibility for some great times together. And it represents a lot of times of some of the deepest struggles that we know about, the hardest things and most painful things, and times when life was bad, things were hard. You know, there's a story, of course, in the Old Testament there of David and Absalom. Probably represents the intensest picture that I see of a father and his son in a relationship gone wrong. You know, it's quite the story. It's a lengthy story about how that situation developed and how it all came about. And David there and his busyness and his duties and his life he was living. And here grew up this little boy, Absalom. And he was a good-looking boy, and he had brothers and had sisters, and obviously a pretty intense young man. There came a time that, you know, something deeply hurt his life. Something went wrong. And there's pain there, and his dad didn't seem to notice. Dad didn't care. And perhaps Dad wasn't aware. But it wouldn't go away for him. And it got into his heart. And it turned into something. And he was bitter. He was angry. And so he set out to fix it. And he was going to even the score. There was a long process there of his hatred for his dad. And a lot of failures on both sides to go around. And missed opportunities to reach out and to make a difference and to redeem it and to call it back to what it could have been. And Absalom, you know the story, it went on. And he made his mark in the kingdom. And he made his friends. And he made his plans. And he gathered the people around him. And it was all with one goal. And it was all with one aim. And he had a mark of what he planned to do. And he set it up in his mind. And I know what it's like to stand there and run through conversations in your head of what you're going to say when you get a chance. And how it's been wrong. That wasn't with my dad. I've had a special opportunity to have a dad with a good relationship. And I appreciate what he's done. And so I haven't faced that. But I know what it's like to plan. And to know what I'm going to say, and to fight with that struggle, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to make a difference. You know, so he went on in that picture. And he finally had the opportunity. And he finally had his chance, and he made his move. And we see David being evicted from the palace. And here comes Absalom, and he's winning, and he's got a score to settle. In 2 Samuel 16:20, we find the high point of his plans there. So then said Absalom to Ahithophel, "Give counsel among you, what shall we do?" And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, "Go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong." So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. And there he was, on top, in the house, the very top, and everybody could see what was going on. And if you look back at the story of Bathsheba, we can see that the Bible says that this responsibility for this situation rested squarely on the shoulders of David. If you look at that story. But this evil act of defiance that was going on here, this settling the score, this making of the mark, had one aim. It was the aim of his hatred at the heart of his father. And he hated him. And then on top, in that high place, he was going to settle the score. I've entitled the message tonight, "A Sniper in the Tower." And he was born Charles Whitman on June 24th of 1941. The first son of a self-made carpenter in Florida. And he was also named Charles Whitman. And this daddy probably loved his little son. And around this busy contracting life that he was living, he spent time with him, and he took him hunting, and he taught him how to shoot. And this daddy was a perfectionist. And he was hard to please. And he often disciplined his little boy harshly for not living up to the standards that he demanded. But he made up for it. He spent time with him, and there was always guns around. And he taught him how to shoot. And the mother, too, suffered from this father and his demanding ways. And lots of ways to displease this daddy. Lots of ways to make him angry. And mama suffered, too. And although this little Charlie, he tried to make it work. And he tried to make it okay. It was ever so hard to please him. So Charlie tried, and he learned his lessons well. He became an expert marksman with the guns. And his dad would brag that Charlie could shoot the eye out of a squirrel by the time he was 16. And he tried hard. Charlie was a bright boy, an IQ of 136. And at 12 years and 3 months old, he became the youngest person in the world to be an Eagle Scout in the Boy Scouts. And he tried hard. And he could play the piano proficiently. And around the age of 12, he took an extensive paper route with the Miami Herald. And he saved all he could. And he bought himself a motorbike, and he used it on the paper route. And it was pretty rough growing up with this dad. And he was demanding. And he was hard on him. And he could never get it quite right. And neither could his mom. Or his two younger brothers. He was just terrible hard to please. It was rough. It was getting worse and not better. And on some one night around his 18th birthday, he went out with friends and had a little too much to drink. And he came home, and his dad was angry. And he beat him up, and he threw him in the family swimming pool. And the boy told his friends later, "You know, I almost drowned. I just about didn't make it out." So to get away from his dad, he secretly volunteered for the Marines around the time of his 18th birthday. And the Marines soon realized that they had a prize. He was an expert marksman. He was a sniper. Very proficient at very long distances, and especially at moving targets. He seemed to almost hit those better than standing still. And with those good grades and that expert marksmanship and his good behavior, the Marines gave him a scholarship to the University of Texas to study mechanical engineering there in the hot city of Austin. And there in the center of the university was a tower, a clock tower, with a parapet and a deck 230 feet high off the ground. And while there in school, he met and married a pretty girl named Kathy. But somehow there in that setting, things started to go bad, and he started to gamble. And without the discipline of the Marines, it seemed like his life just kind of went downhill, and he couldn't control himself. And he was angry too. And he slapped his wife around a little. And he hated himself for it. And his studies got harder. And to keep up, he started taking drugs to stay awake at night so he could study. And because of his bad behavior, he lost his scholarship. And he's forced to go to his dad for money to make this all work. And he hated it. And besides that, his dad was getting worse with mom at home. And so he helped her move out. He drove to Florida. And he called the police to stand on the lawn while she packed, because he was scared of his dad. He hated his dad. He couldn't stand that man, because of what he was himself. And how he'd gotten there. It's his mom. She moved into an apartment close by. But for Charlie, the problems wouldn't go away. And he hated so deeply. And he hated himself. And he hated his dad. And he hated his life. He hated his dad for what he had become. Then early one morning, that was to become a blistering hot August 1st of 1966, he set out to get even, to make this better for all the things that life had brought to him. And so he wrote this note, this suicide note, condemning his father for what he had become in his twisted way. He set out to make him pay. Confused and hurting, he lashed out in all directions. And it is clear that he wanted his father to have to answer for what was about to happen. And so he went over to his mother's place. And he stabbed her. And she was dead. And he left a note there. And he went home to his wife and he stabbed her. And she was dead. And somehow he portrayed that as freedom from his dad and what this had become. And he packed 8 guns and 700 rounds of ammunition in a footlocker. And in the middle of the morning, he drove down there to the University of Austin. And he's waved in as a student. He drove up to this clock tower. He got out. And he walked in and he rode the elevator to the top. There's a secretary up there. And he killed her. And 4 visitors, a family came in there just to see the parapet. That's where you would go to look. There's a big tower with a concrete parapet all the way around. You could stand on there and look out over the busy university. And so visitors came, 4 of them. He shot them, shotgun. And he stepped out on the observation deck and he jammed the door shut. He tied a white bandana around his head to keep the sweat out of his eyes on that hot August day. And he got his favorite deer rifle and he put the guns carefully around the top so he could run and grab a gun. And he leaned up over the edge with his favorite gun, a 6mm Remington deer rifle, with which he was extremely proficient. And he started shooting people, shooting strangers, people he had no idea who they were and where they were going. No reason to dislike. And for the next 90 minutes, as a helpless Austin police force and citizens watching TV grabbed their hunting rifles and ran down there to try to help, he stood up behind that concrete barrier and shot people. 500 yards. Riding a bike. It seemed like he couldn't miss. And they were helpless. And they tried to fly a fixed-wing airplane over there, and so he shot at that, and they had to stay back. And they couldn't get to him. They couldn't help. And there he was. They were pinned down and helpless. And by the way, this is the basis for the beginning of the Special Weapons and Tactics Unit, better known as the SWAT team in America. This is where it started. Because they were helpless. And finally, 2 policemen realized what was up, and with a 3rd civilian, they charged the tower. And they went up the stairs and out onto the parapet and went around the corner and ended his life. And the shooting stopped, and all around was the dead and the dying, innocent. Something like 16 dead and 32 wounded. And the media descended on this daddy in Florida like he knew they would. And Charlie Sr. stood there in the spotlight and he was held accountable for what this had become. And surrounded by animosity, he was forced to admit, yes, that's my son. And yes, I was hard on him. And yes, I beat him up. And yes, I beat his mother. And yes, I taught him to shoot. And yes, something is horribly wrong. And the bullets kept coming for Charlie Sr. And he couldn't get away. And it haunted him. And there was nowhere to hide from the sniper in the tower. And in that, I see the picture that Absalom on that roof had very little to do with lust and everything with a hatred for his daddy. He's going to get rid of that man. And tonight, I wish I could say this stuff's all out there. That's somewhere else. That's a story from the Marines. You know, as I interact with people, I think about all the boys and dads here tonight. You know, the story's way too familiar. It's way too familiar. And there's many boys in our churches that have been destroyed by their father. And daddy turned him into a sniper, and it was just pain, and he was just going to hit back as hard as he could. He's going to make it even. He's biding the time. When the day came, he's going to settle the score. And I don't know where you fit into that picture tonight. I don't know where you are in the picture. But I'd like to make a few observations on these situations. Number one, that the daddy, he is without question responsible for what he has taught you. You can't do nothing about that. That's his answers at judgment with how he taught you and what he showed you. So he's responsible for what he taught you. And number two, you are responsible for what you have learned. Because it's a choice. And you choose to be proficient with the weapons. And number three, when you take up the weapons, you become just like him. And he taught you that. And you become just like him. And the things that you don't like that he's doing to you, and you do it back, and now you're the same. So when you take up the weapons, you become just like him. Number four, I want you to consider carefully who all gets hurt when the shooting starts. Who all gets hurt. And think about the terrible consequences there in Austin. And his mother. And his wife. And people he claimed to love. Because when the shooting starts, everybody gets hurt. All your loved ones. All those that are close to you. Consider too what's left when the shooting stops. And now you've said it. And now you've taken the opportunity. And now you slam the door. And the tires squealed as you left. And you've made your mark. You've taken the stand. And what's left? And is what's left what you want to be left when it's all over? Consider that if all you do, if all you learn is how to shoot, you have nothing else to teach your baby. You've nothing else to teach them about relationships. If all you ever learned was how to shoot, then your turn is coming. And we'll do it all again. Consider, too, how peaceful it would be if you laid down your weapons. If you just gave it up. And you just put up with it. And you just treated him like Jesus would. And consider eternity. And the end of time. And where you want to be. And is it really where you want your daddy to be? And so you become responsible to change the situation and to make it right and to do your best to lay it down. And consider a better way. And it don't have to be like that. And it don't have to end like that. And there's nothing saying that it's got to end in an oak tree with three darts in your heart. It's all over. Tonight, I don't know where that story finds you. It is so common, it is so reoccurring, so sad. So unnecessary. But Jesus wants to do something for us. He wants to take that pain and fix it and make it better and be a father to us and help us as we attempt to help others. And you feel badly with David there. It's Absalom, my son. My son. It was too late, and he couldn't fix it, and he could never go back. And the opportunity was gone. And Daddy, that's a warning to you, if you're here tonight. This is your chance, and it'll soon be over. And so you make a choice. That's what it comes down to. And what will you choose? Let's bow our heads for prayer.